Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. There are only 110 packages left in my list, believe it or not. Like, that's how many, divide that by 10, and that's how many episodes there are left of this podcast. At the end of once I reach the end of this list, no more shows. I'm ending the show. So that's like not that long. This has gone a little bit quicker in a weird way than I realized it was going to go. And I think part of that was because there were a bunch of, just like very similar packages that just weren't worth talking about, like video drivers. Like, what can you say without sort of, I don't know, deconstructing video drivers, which I can't even do. So, we've got 110 more to go. And today I think we're going to get through the requisite 10 or 11, maybe 12, maybe 13. We'll see. First one in the list today is zorg-cf-files. This is, I have very little to say about this. These are template files or something, or configuration files, CF, for iMake. iMake being the make tool that X11 used to use, but has deprecated now. Even the package description itself states that these configuration files, many of them haven't been tested in over a decade. So this is not a relevant package. In fact, in spirit of just keeping my own system a little bit tidier, I'm going to do a sudo remove package zorg-cf-files. And now those are gone. Okay, next package then is Zorg Docs. And this is, as you can imagine, ostensibly documentation for X11 libraries and so on. And I say ostensibly, I mean, it is documentation, it's valid documentation. I've read quite a lot of it by now. But it just really, I feel like, and please argue with me on this if you differ, but I feel like there has been so much progress since X11 that basically, really, when we say X11 today, we are exclusively talking about the X11 server. But X11 in the context of X11 documentation and the X11 packages is literally everything that X11 ever produced. Maybe not literally. Is basically everything X11 has ever produced. And there's just so much there that just doesn't seem to feel relevant anymore. And it's really hard to kind of sort and sift through this stuff and understand what was true and valid and significant back in, 2003 versus 20 years later, 21 years later, whenever you're listening to this, 30 years later, who knows? It's really difficult to kind of differentiate. And I think one of the sections that you might look at, I just read these in links myself, because they're all stored in user doc, Zorg Docs 171, and then there are directories within there. And so you've got things like platforms, input, graphics, fonts, and X server. And that's another thing about this whole thing. I don't even know where you're supposed to start. Like, I don't really feel like it's very clear, sort of like where the jumping off point is. There's no structure here. It's just a bunch of stuff. But anyway, I find that fonts is a really good one to sort of start with. And by good one to start with, I mean it's one of those things that maybe would convince you not to continue. Because, I mean, it starts out talking about two font systems. X11 includes two font systems. The original core X11 font system, present in all implementations of X11, and the XFT font system, which may not yet be distributed with implementations of X11 that are too old, and anything not based on X-Free86. I mean, is there an X11 out there that's not based on X-Free86 anymore? I don't know. Maybe there is. And then it just goes on about how to install fonts, and it's just page after page of different ways to install fonts, and none of them are accurate. I mean, no, sorry, they might be accurate. None of them accurately reflect how I personally have ever installed a font. I've never done any of these things. I have installed fonts in exactly two ways. I have copied TTF files or OTF files or whatever to my personal fonts directory, or I've clicked on a font file in Dolphin and KDE Plasma Desktop pops up a little install the font thing, and I say yes, I type in a root password, or I just say install locally, and it gets installed in my font directory, or in the system font directory, whichever I have chosen. None of these other methods ring true for me. I mean, again, it might be accurate for someone, it might be important information that maybe to still have documented. I mean, this was written in 2012, so I do question that. That's 12 years ago, and it feels like it might have been old at the time of writing. I'm just not convinced. That's probably enough about documentation, that documentation set, because I'm not convinced that that's super useful. All right, next one up is the Zorg server. This is it. This is the server that you're using right now to view your graphics on Slackware anyway, unless you're using X-Wayland or Wayland, you might be. But this is, yeah, this is the Zorg server, which one of the many things about the Zorg server for me is it's so convoluted on how you start the thing. You know, you just think, okay, well, so it's called X11, right? Okay, well, I'll start X11. No, you won't. Oh, it's X.org. So I'll start X.org. No, you won't. Okay, well, I'll somehow execute what's in X init. No, don't do that. Use start X. No, don't even actually do that. Start a session manager directly as root, but then drop root. It's just, it's so convoluted to get into X, and it's just, it feels like there should be, well, really, it feels like there should be start X. That's the command that there should be, right? Just start X, there, we're in. Everything is taken care of, but that's never how it is. And that's flexible, that's good. There's flexibility there. You can start X, you can start a session manager, you can do a lot of different, you can get there in different ways, but I've always felt like it felt like you could never quite touch the X server, you know, like, don't really use the Zorg server, just use commands that use the Zorg server. And that has always felt very strange to me. We're going to see two alternatives to this. Not exactly. But we're going to see other ways that this could be. And it is fascinating. We're going to see that this episode. So this is very exciting. You don't know it's exciting yet, but I'm telling you it is exciting. So that's Zorg server. Typically in real life, the way, you know, on Slackware, I feel like this is one of the most that of like Slackware always. It's super transparent. Like you really learn what well, with Zorg, I don't know that you ever really learn anything, but you really get into you understand how components fit together with Slackware because it makes it clear to you. So in Slackware, after you install, you reboot, you get dropped into a text console. That's your computer. Like it or not, that is what Slackware is. That's what Linux is. It's a terminal with text. Now, it's the modern day. You want a graphic server? That's fine. The way that you get there is, well, first you create a user. You set up a user. Now you want to boot into a login screen, otherwise known as a session manager. The way you do that is that you go into your init tab and you choose to boot to run level 4 instead of 3. It's very clearly commented, so you can understand that pretty quickly just from reading a little bit of commentary. And then you could reboot or whatever you need to do, and suddenly you're at a login screen. It's that simple. Maybe you've done XWM config, but you did that during the install anyway. You're asked what desktop environment you actually want to use, and then you're just kind of done, and it all happens because of those files, because of XWM config and what it has placed into xinitrc, and however run level 4 works, whatever that executes to get you to trigger the commands in xinitrc, it all happens and sets it up. Like I say, you don't really ever learn the exact trail of commands, because I don't know with Zorg if you ever can. It's just so obtuse. But with Slackware, at least you're getting the steps there. You know, I've chosen my desktop environment. I've chosen my run level. And that's why that happens. It doesn't just happen on its own. You set that up, and so you understand that there were choices that you made to get you to where you are. Now, in addition to Xorg, you get the XDMX application, which is quite fascinating. Never knew about this one. I know about similar projects, but this is an interesting one. This extends your desktop to displays that are not physically connected to your computer. So it's kind of an extreme form of X forwarding, where you're not just forwarding X like a client application, you're forwarding your whole desktop and the associated environment to another physically distinct computer, a remote machine. Which means that if you have a spare laptop, you could, if you wanted to, I mean, I don't know that this is the most elegant way to do this, but I mean, you could set your laptop next to your one monitor. Let's say you're on a desktop, because I'm pretending like your setup is exactly like mine. So you're sitting at your workstation with a monitor, you got a laptop next to it, you could make your workstation desktop extend from your monitor over to the screen of the laptop. And you could use, functionally, that laptop is just another monitor for your main machine. The setup for that is a little bit wonky. I mean, like I say, I don't think this would necessarily be the most efficient way to do it, but maybe it would. I mean, because you could script it all. So you need to, from the laptop, you need to SSH with X forwarding, which we did in a couple of episodes ago. So SSH dash capital X or even dash capital Y. So you SSH from the laptop, which is going to be the dummy, to the desktop. And you're doing this with SSH forwarding. And as you'll recall from previous episodes, you do need to make sure that your SSH server on your desktop is configured to yes, do X11 forwarding yes, and what was it, X11, I don't remember what the key was in the config file. Let's find out really quick. /etc/ssh/sshd_config. Here we go. So X11 forwarding, yes, I said that already. X11 display offset, that's what it is, 10. Okay, so now you've got that set up on your server, on your desktop, which is the SSH server in this scenario, and you SSH in from the laptop, which you want to use as just a dummy monitor. Okay, so you're SSH'd in from your laptop to the place that you want to sort of be the source of your X server. Then you should get the display. Now, I happen to know that the display is going to be 10. How do I know that? Well, because we just set in the in SSHD config for the display offset to be 10. But you can find out if you want. You can do export grep display, and it says that there's the display is set to localhost :10.0. So that's the display for this SSH session with the forwarded X11 session. Okay, so then you can start XDMX itself. And this is not going to work for me. It might work for you. Didn't exactly work for me. It does respond, though. So I did user bin XDMX. I don't know why I did the full path. I just did. XDMX, that's a capital X, :1, plus Xinerama, XINERAMA. That's the thing that can extend a desktop, I believe. --display:0.0, --display:localhost:10.0. And then I did --ignore bad font paths, --no render, --no glx proxy. And those last two I added as a desperate attempt to get an image on the screen after running this command, and it never did quite work. What I can get whether I have no render and no glx proxy or not, if I do xdmx :1 plus Xinerama --display:0.0, --localhost:10.0, --ignore bad font paths, I get both screens blacked out. but they're both blacked out. And that's exciting, right? So I get a feeling that I am actually using my laptop as a secondary monitor here. The problem is that both monitors are a void. They don't have anything on them. Oh dear, and now I can't... Oh no, now I cannot seem to... Oh, here we go. Okay. I couldn't get my image back. I thought I had completely ruined everything. But no, I was able to control C and force the session to end. And so then I was able to restore my image on my main computer, which is the one currently recording my voice. So I was especially keen to be able to keep that alive. I'll try one more time. For kicks. So there it is. They're blacked out. I wiggle the mouse on my main machine and no, it does not restore the image. Control C to get out of there. So I don't know what I'm missing. I see that it is picking up my, like, it's recognizing the size of the desktop. So it says two screens. Zenorama is configuring two screens configured with Zenorama 3840 1080, two visuals at depth 24. So I feel like it is like it wants to work. I just don't get the feeling that it knows how to draw an image across these two screens. And I don't know exactly why. I guess I could try just SSHing with dash capital X and then running the command. No, still didn't work. And maybe, yeah, okay. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not entirely sure what I am missing here to get the image on screen. And the man page doesn't really have a whole lot of, like, troubleshooting ideas, unfortunately. There are a bunch of options, and that's kind of what I mined for all the options that I did try, like the no render, the no GLX proxy, and there are yet more things that I could imagine would influence, you know, sort of like how well something gets drawn on a screen. But I, you know, it would be a question of just trying each one after the other. And I spent a lot of time on this, and that's as far as I got. So I got blank screens on two computers. That's not what's supposed to happen, of course. Like, what's supposed to happen is that you're supposed to see your desktop stretched across two screens, and you can drag windows and your mouse cursor, and it's just like another screen. Of course, it's over an SSH connection doing a forwarding X, so I'm not sure really truly how quickly that really sort of can work, you know? I mean, I imagine there's going to be a lag. I don't know. I mean, like I say, there was no lag for the blanking of the screen, so maybe it's actually quite good. But there are other tools that do this, specifically the Synergy project, which you can find at Symless, that's SYMLESS.com. That's a system, I guess it must be open source. I don't even actually know now that I'm thinking about it. I think I'm just recommending a non-open source thing on an open source podcast. I don't see the source code. In fact, it says buy now. I never knew Synergy wasn't open source. I thought it was open source. Isn't that funny? Well, they certainly, yeah, I mean, and maybe that's why I heard so much about them, because it was one of those things where they made quite the impression on a bunch of content creators, I guess, a couple of years ago. I don't know, let's say 7 years ago, arbitrarily. And it, I always thought that it made an impression on people because it was so cool, but it looks like it actually made an impression on people probably because they were purchasing advertising, or maybe not, maybe both, maybe neither. So anyway, that's XDMX. In theory, you should be able to put your desktop across lots of different devices, but unfortunately, I was not able to get an image myself. So next up is Zephyr. That's Zephyr. This is a really, really fun one. And this, to be perfectly honest, and I know that this is not necessarily technically possible. I know I have the luxury of just asking for the world, because I don't have to worry about making it work. So I complain about how hard it is to get Zorg working, or rather I complain about how hard it was to get Zorg working. Nowadays, I haven't had a problem with Xorg. Of course, I say that, and I just tried to do XDMX, and it didn't work. So in that sense, I guess, yeah, there is still problems. It doesn't just magically work. Which again, broadcasting like a desktop across a network and making it appear magically on another computer is, it's science fiction. I mean, it's apparently not. I have seen it done. But I mean, it's on the level of science fiction. So me complaining at this point about how it's not easy enough, that's, it's disingenuous is what it is. But I am just saying, like, from an objective, non-judgmental standpoint, this stuff can get pretty difficult. It's kind of rough. But Zephyr, you're going to see, is just shockingly easy. It's just so cool. So what is Zephyr? Zephyr is another X server. Within your X server, it's another X server. So I'm going to do XEPHYR. I think I have to do like a dash screen, and I'll make it maybe, what was it? 1024x768. Is that the old resolution? I think it must be. And is that all I need? I feel like that might be all I need. No, :1, I think. Maybe dash display, :1. I don't know. Making stuff up. Nope, that's not it. Okay, how about just :? Yeah, okay, it's just :1. Okay, so I've just launched Zephyr with Zephyr dash screen 1024x768 or x768. Of course, I could have used any value for that, 800x600, 1920x1080, whatever. And then space :1. Why :1? Well, as you may have guessed, I'm already using :0. That's my normal display. So I'm assigning Zephyr the designation of :1 with an implied .0. And when I hit return for that, a window appears on my desktop, and it is a black screen. That's a kind of a common theme in Zorg related activities. You do a thing, and then you get a black screen. But don't worry, in this case, it's fine. It's normal. It's all right. So I now have an extra X server running, and I can use a silly little demo program like X Logo, but I don't want X Logo on my screen. I want it on in Zephyr. So I'm going to put, before I launch X Logo, I'm going to put display equals, all capitals, display equals :1, space X Logo. So I'm dynamically setting the environment variable just for this command. I'm telling it, hey, from now on, as you run this command, don't run it on display :0, do it on display :1. And if I look at my Zephyr window, the X logo has appeared. Not in a window. I mean, in the Zephyr window. And interestingly, it doesn't have any window decoration. So Zephyr is not running a window manager. Do I want it to be running a window manager? Could do. I'm going to open up another tab because I forgot to do a ampersand after. Oh, I guess I can't. Why are no tabs opening? There we go. Okay, so here's... Oh, I was hitting the wrong key on my keyboard. Isn't that weird? So here's... I've got another tab open, so I'll just do... let's see. Display equals :1, and then I'll do flux box. Oh, and an ampersand. There. And now Zephyr has a flux box session running. I can right-click. I get my little menu. I can select... I don't know, Firefox, launch Firefox in this little sub menu. It's just, it's so cool. It is so cool. And this, I mean, you've got to try this, dear listener. If you've never done this, you must try this. Absolutely. Like, just go home, type in Zephyr dash screen, some size, and then :1, and then launch stuff inside of it. It's really, really cool. It is just so, just seamless. Oh, and one thing here, I forgot to do this even. A capital XEPHYR dash screen. I'll just do 800x600 and then :1. So I've got my screen back, my little embedded X server, and now I'm going to go to another. Now, this is, yeah, I must have killed my control key somehow. That's weird. Probably when I was messing around with Xmod map at one point. So I've got my little Zephyr server here. I'm going to do display equals :1 and then type X eyes. This is a good one to demonstrate. So my mouse If I keep my mouse outside of the Zephyr window, Xeyes doesn't move. His little eyeballs don't follow my cursor. But the moment my cursor traverses the Zephyr window, those eyes move. So it's like a little containerized X server. Now, the man page specifically for Zephyr says that it is a K-drive server, I don't know what that is, that outputs to a window on a pre-existing host X display. Think XNest, but the support for modern extensions like Composite, Damage, and R&R. Okay, so unlike XNest, which is an X proxy limited to the capabilities of the host X server, Zephyr is a real X server, which uses the host X server window as a frame buffer for fast SHM, that's shared memory, X images. Okay, so what it's saying, not terribly clearly necessarily, is that it's a K-drive server. I actually don't know what that means. And that it is a little like XNest. But what is XNest? And this is a common problem that documentation writers sort of run into, is they use the previous technology as a starting point for their documentation, under the assumption that everyone will know what XNest is. I mean, why wouldn't you know what XNest was? I mean, because this is just like XNest. So, you know, it's a lot like XNest, except it's not a proxy like XNest. You would have known that XNest was a proxy, though. I mean, like, no, I didn't know that XNest was a proxy, and I still don't know what XNest is. I mean, we're going to find out together, dear listener, because that's actually the next package. But that's, it's just, I think when we're explaining things in tech, I think a lot of times we do have that propensity to sort of give the last reference point, forgetting that that documentation might be around for a good 10 years, and everyone will have forgotten about that other thing, because your thing is so much better. So it's a common thing that I see a lot. I see it a lot, both in open source documentation and others, because people just think that while they're writing the documentation, everyone knows the other thing, so we'll just reference that. Yes, but ideally, you're going to replace that other thing. No one's going to remember that other thing. Explain it to us like we've never heard of it before. So that's just a little documentation tip. So what is XNest? Well, you're not going to find out. I'm going to force you and me to wait to find out, just so that this lesson really, really embeds itself in our minds until after coffee. So go get a cup of coffee. We'll come back and then we'll find out what XNest is. Try not to lose focus. I know you're going to be really, really wondering what XNest is, but really focus on your coffee. Enjoy it. I'm back. I have my coffee. I am still drinking Big Cozy, believe it or not. I know I've said this for weeks. It's almost gone. It's almost gone. I guess 250 grams goes farther than I thought. And I've even been making like rather, I kind of been spending a lot of coffee on like espressos, because my stovetop espresso machine broke several months ago now. And I still haven't bought a replacement like gasket, because the gasket is literally as much as the coffee pot was, and I just refuse to do that. So I've just switched over to an actual espresso machine, taking up a lot of room on the counter, but it is just, I don't know, it's worth it. So anyway, we're thinking really about XNest. We all are. We don't know what it is. We want to know what it is. I hate to disappoint. It is actually almost exactly like Zephyr. So Zephyr, if you'll recall, before the coffee break, launched an actual X server within the existing X server. And we were able to launch a clock and Fluxbox and all kinds of things in there. I didn't do a clock. I did X logo, whatever. So XNest is apparently, according to the Zephyr documentation, if that's to be believed, I mean, it could be slander for all I know, but it does identify XNest as an X proxy, meaning that window containing an apparent separate X server is really just another version or a proxy space for our running X server. So it's limited to whatever our current X server can do, which I don't really know, like, the impact of any of that. I don't know why that matters. XNest is basically the same syntax. So XNest, again, with the capital X. That's always confusing because some of these use, like, lowercase x, some of them don't. But this one is capital X, N-E-S-T, space screen, and then some screen resolution. So I'll just, oop, darn it. Oop. Oh, interesting. So, yeah, I must have really messed up my keyboard here because my num lock is no longer working. I can't seem to turn the num lock on, so I can't use the keypad over there, and my control key doesn't work. So I think when I was messing around with some of these applications, I've screwed up something, but that's okay. I can fix that later. XNest dash screen 800 X 600. And then what was it? Just colon one, right? No display. So colon one. So I'm assigning, screen doesn't, that's not a thing with XNest, I guess. I thought it was. Okay. It's fine. We'll just do XNest colon one then. Yep. That worked. Okay. So I guess you can't, maybe it's a geometry or something. It must be some, I'm pretty sure there was some way to change the size of XNest. I'm not seeing it. There's a lot more options, I feel, for XNest than, it is geometry and position optionally. Okay, well, actually, I'm going to try that. Yeah, more options, I think, than Zephyr. Okay, so XNest dash geometry 800 by 600. Yeah, cool. That worked. And then colon one. Okay, so now I'm back kind of where I was apparently with Zephyr. I mean, I've got a black screen on my monitor, like a black window, I should say. It's not the whole screen. And then I'll switch over to a different tab in console and I'll do display equals colon one. And I guess I'll do X eyes again just to see if that behaves any differently. No, same deal. So if my mouse is outside of X eyes, as it is embedded in XNest, which is embedded in turn in my, you know, in my X server, the eyes do not move. But if I traverse the window with my mouse cursor, the eyes follow it as expected. So to the user, I might argue that there doesn't really appear to be that much of a difference. Like I could imagine using XNest or Zephyr interchangeably, at least at a cursory glance. I could be wrong. I mean, possibly there's a huge difference and it would be something that I would notice with actual rigorous testing. But yeah, I've just launched Fluxbox and that seems to work there as well. So I'm not seeing the difference personally, but I mean, this is also literal, like, 3 minutes of testing right now. So I wouldn't take that as an informed decision. But those are those two packages. And I really think they're just the coolest thing. And the reason I think that is because they feel like what Zorg wants to be, you know? I just want to type in Zorg and I want to get the graphics. And I understand that in practicality, well, historically that was not possible because there's a lot of hardware out there. There's a lot of different variables that you had to consider, not just for the monitor, but also for your input devices, your keyboard, mouse, things like that. So I get it. Wasn't easy. And I maintain that one of the most amazing achievements in Linux has been what they were calling, I think for a while, Bulletproof X or something like that. Was that what they were calling it? I don't know. No fail X, something like that. I mean, where you would just install Linux and X would just come up. I mean, it was amazing. It was unbelievable. Like what progress. So that was very cool. And I don't know how much of that is down to, just the new technology being easier to talk to and less volatile, or how much of it is just better code on the back end. I'm not sure, but I do sincerely admire what they've done with the X server. And certainly, you know, you have to consider, well, what user is launching this process? Like if you're just signing in as root and you start X, or you just type in Zorg and you were to get just the screen, well, where's your session? Who's your session management? Who's managing this session? What user are you logged in as, and so on? So I get that it is kind of a, it, it, There has to be a process around this, but I guess I just wish it were just that much easier, just a little easier, just like launching Zephyr, and then suddenly you just have access to everything. It's a really cool experience. If you haven't tried it, go try it. It's super cool and super easy, as you've just witnessed. Okay, next up is Zorg Server XVFB. This is a weird one. It is like, superficially, like Zephyr and like XNest, except there's no graphics. So XVFB is a virtual frame buffer X server for X11. So it's an X server that you can run on a machine with no display hardware. So, you know, if you've ever been on a server or something, and there's no screen attached to it, but for some reason you need to launch an X11 application, you wouldn't be able to do that. There's just no way to do that. With XVFB, you can create a virtual frame buffer, and then you've got like an invisible graphic server, and you can launch X11 client applications. I'm just trying to figure out why you would want it, because you still wouldn't see it, you understand. You're just sort of lying to your computer and saying, well, yeah, you got a screen. No, you do. You've got a screen. Trust me. It's this pretend screen over here. So launch your applications there. It is a weird one. It is really weird. I can't think of a time where I would have wanted to have started an X server without seeing it. Like, I'm just trying to think of the use case, and I can't. Because, okay, great. So now I've XVFB:1, same deal as Zephyr and XNest. So display equals :1, and then I'll do X eyes, maybe? Okay, cool. X eyes are launched somewhere on my pretend screen. I can't see them, you know, so I can't quite figure out what kind of X application you would need to be running, but not, you know, directly interact with. I just can't figure it out. But I love that this exists, because this is, someone's going to need this at some point. Someone's using this, and it's super, super important, I think. I mean, well, it's super important, you know, for that one time that you realize, oh my gosh, I actually do need that. It's never happened to me, but I can imagine it happening, and I love that that function exists. So that's XVFB. Zorg Server X Wayland. Well, we already kind of talked about this when we were talking about Wayland, but I guess I kind of did a disservice, because I did kind of go on a divergence there about X Wayland, because, I mean, X Wayland functionally, realistically, that is what you're using, probably, right? I mean, that's what we're all going to use for a very long time, because X applications, they've been around for decades. Wayland has been around now for maybe, what, a decade? Maybe? I don't know. So, you know, we're going to be using X11 applications within Wayland, and this is a long stretch of a transitionary time. So realistically, I think X Wayland is kind of the thing that we're going to be actually dealing with. But that said, there are ways that you can interact directly with Wayland. So because I shortchanged Wayland by talking about X Wayland, I'm going to shortchange X Wayland by talking about Wayland. Wayland is a graphics server or a compositor, I guess. I don't know. And the thing that it kind of, you know, like if you just type in, I don't know, like Wayland, what even happens if you type? I don't think there is such a thing. Yeah, there's no command Wayland. So how do you get Wayland, right? Like, how do you, this is the same, we're back at the Zorg problem, right? How do you start Wayland? Nope, that doesn't exist. Like, how do you do it? Who knows? No one knows. So, and it's frustrating. I think this is the kind of, this is the frustrating thing about, I guess it's about modular, you know, modularity, because we all hear so much about Wayland that's in your mind, you think, okay, so I need to get Wayland. I need to start Wayland. How do I start Wayland? And you look around and you find packages called Wayland and Wayland protocols. Neither of them have executables that'll start Wayland. It's confusing. Well, it turns out that what you really need is a Wayland compositor, something to actually draw windows on top of each other and so on. And the thing, the one that I know of, a simple one that exists, I guess, a pure Wayland compositor is called Weston, Weston. That's not on Slackware, so this is bonus content, but you can find it on slackbuilds.org. So install Weston, and then in run level 3 of Slackware, so just you're looking at a text console here, type in the word Weston, Weston. And it starts, and it is not a black screen. Thank you very much. It's got a little background, a little wallpaper. I don't know where it comes from. It's got a clock up in the upper right corner, and the icon of a terminal application up in the upper left corner. And if you drag your mouse over that, you get Weston Terminal tooltip. So if I start that, now I've got a little terminal on my screen that I can drag around. There's a nice drop shadow. Yeah, it looks okay. I mean, I don't seem to be able to resize this window. So yeah, it is a really basic sort of compositing application that apparently, yes, it can draw windows over windows. I've just launched another terminal, and it does in fact draw over the other terminal. It even dims the other terminal a little bit, so you know you can kind of focus on the one that's active, or that has focus, I guess. And then you could try something like, let's be cheeky and try. Oh, it does not recognize my Dvorak keyboard. Okay, ooh, that's fun. So we'll try Xeyes. Well, obviously that's not going to work, right? Xeyes, what does it want? It wants the display. What's the display? I don't know that there is one. I don't know if that's how Wayland even talks about things. Let's do export grep display. Ah, display is Wayland-1. That's interesting. Okay, so let's pretend like we didn't know better, and we're going to do display equals. There we go. That's where the equal sign is. Wayland-1. Xeyes can't open display Wayland-1. So obviously the what's happening here is that Weston running in Wayland, this is a pure Wayland process. There's no X server running right now. So X applications cannot run within this environment. So if you want to see that for yourself, give Weston a go. Just download it from, download, install, build and install from slackbuilds.org, and then launch it from run level 3. And you'll feel the disconnect between Wayland and X. Like, you can't do it. You cannot run an X application in pure Wayland. Now, what you do have, and this is where I'm circling back around to the actual topic at hand, what you do actually have is the ability to run an X Wayland session, so that Wayland and X can, or so that X applications can launch within Wayland. Next package is Zorg SGML Doc Tools. This is a bunch of XML, SGML specifically entities, so that if you are building X11 from source and you want to build all that documentation, you can build, your XML build system will understand what these special tags that Zorg is using actually mean, and how to treat them, and what CSS to apply to the HTML output that you derive from all that XML, and so on. So a pretty common kind of utility package when you are writing documentation in a markup language that is XML-like, or SGML, or DocBook, all those kinds of applications. You'll see this sort of this tooling around, because you're defining your own schemas, and you need to tell, you need to have a reference point for that. So that's what that is. If you're probably not going to use this if you're not building X11 from source. Well, let's at least get out of the Zorg subsection of this X directory by the end of this episode. I think there's only this last one, actually. Zorg Proto. I think that's the last. Yeah, it is. Okay, cool. So Zorg Proto. This package contains a bunch of header files and specification documents for the core protocols of X11 and a bunch of extensions for X11. So probably pretty important documentation for a developer working on X11 itself. There's a note in here in the README file about updating one of the header files if you update your Linux kernel and so on. So yeah, it's pretty low level stuff you might need to know if you're developing actively that environment, which I am not. XPR is the next. I got time for a couple of others. Let's do XPR. Well, to do XPR, of course, you need to do XWUD. No, XW, yeah, UD. But to do XWUD, you need to do XWD. So, working backwards, XWD is a screenshot application. It stands for X window dump. So you're dumping the contents of an X window. That's the intent. You can do a whole screen as well. So if you do XWD space dash screen dash out, and then whatever out file you want to save it as. And as I understand, I think the format of this, actually, I wonder if I can find out. The format, I think, is XWD. Yeah, it is. Okay, XWD. Okay, so XWD dash screen space dash screen space dash out and then test dot XWD. That's what I'm doing right now. Your cursor turns into crosshairs, so you click on the window that you want to capture. I've just clicked the desktop, and now I've got an image that basically nothing can read. This is a hard sell, this one. But it turns out that you actually, something can read it. Not XPaint. Something can read it, though. And the thing that can read it is XWUD. That stands for X window undump. So if you do XWUD dash IN for in, I don't know why that, I mean, why wouldn't it just be the image that you want? Like, what other option really is there? I didn't see one. I mean, in the man page, it looks like it's just dash in, and I don't see any, like, it just ignores the trailing argument, I guess. Okay, anyway, XWUD dash IN, and then the path to my little test.xwd file, and there it is. It's full screen, big image, basically what I captured, and I say basically because it's not exactly right. It is missing the window decorations, so that's just not captured. It's missing all of the desktop elements, like the panel at the top. It does have the wallpaper. It's got the open windows with the contents of the windows, and then it has something weird in the background of one, and I can't figure out what it is. There's nothing behind this one window that it's captured, and yet it's showing some kind of pattern, like a colorful pattern, and I'm really trying to figure out what it is, just can't figure it out. I don't know where it got that. Oh, I see. No, wait. And it also rendered part of, yes, okay, it is rendered part of my Firefox window, which is not on this desktop. Weirdly, yeah, I don't know why it did that. Yeah, so I don't know about XWD, XWUD. Let's talk about XPR, though. So XPR apparently takes that image that you've just taken, the XWD, and it sends it to a printer. That's what the PR part stands for, X print and X window dump. XPR takes an input, as input, a window dump file produced by XWD and formats it for output on PostScript printers, the digital LN03 or the LA100, the IBM PP3812 page printer, HP LaserJet, and so on. So I don't have any of those things. I don't have those printers. In fact, I don't have a printer. I just don't. I go down to the library and pay them 20 cents a page should I need something printed, which I rarely do. So I can't test this command, but I did at least learn about XWD and XWUD, and I don't believe I'll ever use them. And as has become a little tradition in this X folder, I'm going to do a sudo remove package XWD, XWUD, and XPR. Those are gone. And I think it's time to end the episode. I think that's a good amount of packages. I don't know. I lost count. 10, 12, 13, something around there. Thanks for listening, and come back next week for more. Talk to you then.
Thanks for listening. My name's Klaatu. You can reach me anytime over email with feedback or comments, tips, or just to say hi. My email address is klaatu@slackermedia.info. You can also reach me on the Mastodon network, not Klaatu, at mastodon.xyz. The show's intro and outro music is by Fat Chance Lester. You can find their music on bandcamp.com or on gnuworldorder.info. In the archive, you'll find a music directory containing the album from which this music has been extracted. Until next time, thanks for listening and keep the source open.
Convoluted loop recorded in a 20th of a second is believed by some to be proof of the extraordinary maneuverability of the alien spaceship.